Hello, dear listeners. We are broadcasting through Radio Cool via 104 FM and Radio Mawal 101.7 FM. This is your host, Nancy Atalla. Within ongoing programs through Radio Cool, we are with you today to meet special guest. But before that, let me first introduce him to you. They said, if love played an instrument, I'll bet it would be the piano. 88 keys. Double infinity, and the ability to chop down trees with a sharpened mustache. Our guest today is one of the most traveled of concert pianists, having performed in over 100 countries. He has brought the pleasure of classical music to many audiences around the world, from some of the largest concert halls in capital cities to small towns and to places which are of the musical mainstream and seldom get performances of this type. I'd like to welcome the famous pianist Roman Rudnitsky.
Nice to be here.
It's nice to have you here with us.
Thank you.
Mr. Rudnitsky, would you please share a bit about your background, your prominent Ukrainian musical family?
Well, yes, I came from an entirely musical family. My parents were very active as musicians. My father was a composer, conductor, and pianist. My mother was an opera singer. Yes, they both came from Ukraine. They worked in the opera houses in Kiev, in Kharkiv, in Lviv, major cities there, and then also gave recitals together. And they were in the U.S. for their second tour, and then World War II started, and they had to remain in America. And that's why I was already born there. So I'm only as first generation as an American.
You have an influence from them and
I
the
do,
fact that
yes.
you so much.
Right. And my father started me on the piano, really, because they saw that even before, at a very, very, very young age, that I demonstrated I had perfect pitch and something was pulling me to the piano. So when I was 4 years old, my father started me. I grew up in a town in New Jersey, and Philadelphia was the closest large city. So after a very short period with my father, I went to other teachers in Philadelphia, and later I went to the famous Juilliard School in New York, from which I graduated and have degrees from. I gave my first recital when I was 7 years old.
Oh.
It was in our home, and I still visualize about 50 people sitting, you know, in our living room.
They were 50 people for
about 50 people for my very first concert, and I still have a kind of an image in my mind where they were sitting. As time went on, I started to play more and more concerts. I eventually won some important prizes in a few national and international piano competitions. And things just went on and on until, as you had mentioned, I played out around 100 countries, and every year I continued to do tours around the world. I also played violin at one time for 10 years or so, but it was a second instrument, but it was not on anything you'd call professional. It was just a subsidiary second instrument that I did until I went to Juilliard, and I played clarinet when I was in school and marched in our band, you know, and we had those shows at our football games. In addition to giving concerts around the world, I also was a professor of piano and music at several universities. Indiana University School of Music in Bloomington, Indiana, which is the largest university music school in the world, and I was the youngest member of the piano faculty when I was there. I was there for 4 years. Then I was 1 year as artist in residence at University of Cincinnati College Conservatory. And then I was 39 years at the Dana School of Music, Youngstown State University in Youngstown, Ohio, where I still live. And I retired about 3 years ago, and I'm now professor emeritus from that institution.
Remember the first concert that you played and you performed?
Yes, I still have a few memories of that. As I say, I have that picture of those people sitting there, and
this was the first one.
That was the very first full evening.
Yes.
I mean, I'd appeared in a few of my father's student recitals with other people a couple times before that, but this was the first time that I actually played a full recital. Yes, in our
Did
home.
You play as if you were the you were in the presence of a master at that time?
Well, I mean, I tried to do what I could. I mean, obviously, being only 7 years old, you know, I don't remember that much.
You don't.
I couldn't yet. I wasn't yet aware of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
I tried as best I could, of course.
For how long you've been practicing, you know, or how many hours?
How many hours do I practice?
Yes.
I myself don't practice usually more than 2 hours, if that. I would say between an hour and a half and 2 hours most days when I'm home. There are pianists who will practice 4, 5, 6, and even 7 hours, but I could never do that, and I don't feel I need to do that.
Yeah.
I find that up to 2 hours is sufficient. When I'm on a tour, I really hardly practice. It's not necessary because everything is ready.
Yeah.
Each concert's almost like a practice for the next one. And I only do a little bit of light, just a little bit of light I wouldn't call it practice. It's just going over a few little things shortly before the public comes into the into the hall. That's I like to do that. Mm-hmm. So that allows me to do a lot of other things. That I can go sightseeing. I can go visiting. Mm-hmm. But there are some pianists who will come somewhere and they say, oh, I've got to shut myself up. I've got to go and do work. So they do that. They play their concert. They leave and they've never, they haven't seen anything. They haven't experienced anything. And I think that's a little bit sad if they're like that. But I have the time to do it because I don't need to do that kind of work.
Don't your fingers get really tired after
a
concert?
Not at all. I myself have a lot of energy, and I never get tired.
Knock on wood, then.
After a concert, I could do it all over again. Once in a while, in my travels, there may be a situation where I don't sleep through the night. I have to travel through the night. I can play a concert the next day with no sleep if necessary, and I've done that a couple times. You just do what you have to do.
Yeah. Why Australia? You made the special focus of your career to go to Australia every 2 years and has made 17 tours there since 1979.
Well, actually, it's 18. Why
Australia?
It's just that I've had so much response there that of the around 100 countries I've played in, I've played actually more concerts in quantity in Australia than anywhere else. I was thinking about that recently, and I would say at this point I've probably done about 550 concerts there everywhere. I mean, it goes from the Sydney Opera House down to the smallest towns in every part of the country. And yes, I started to go there every 2 years since 1979. It always seems to be in the odd numbered year. So last year, 2013, was actually my 18th tour, but it was also my largest one to date because I had 42 concerts there. I was there almost 4 months. And that's the other thing. I always stay a long time there, you know, three months, a little more than 3 months, 4 months like it was last year. I've just started work on to start preparing next year's tour, and I have a good feeling that it may even be bigger than last year's because I got so many invitations to come back. Then there are new places. Then there are places from before who couldn't accommodate me last year but said to contact them for next year.
Next year.
It's just that I've gotten so much response there. Anyway, it's a lovely country. I enjoy being there. I have some friends. I have actually a cousin. I have family that's there also.
So you feel at home there?
Yeah. So I enjoy going there every time, and it's become a regular thing every 2 years.
When are you completely satisfied with your work?
Well, every performer knows how the performance went. No matter what the critic says, no matter what the public says, you know yourself if you've met your own standards or not. So that goes with every performance I do, you know. So sometimes I think I said, yeah, it really went nicely. And then I'll say, I'm sorry it wasn't recorded because it really went well. Other times, there are a few little places that I say to myself, yeah, that wasn't quite the way I wanted it. I have to pay special attention to that place next time. You always know that yourself, no matter what the public or others who are listening to you say. You always know that.
Do they criticize you a lot?
No, fortunately not. I mean, every concert is different. I mean, it all depends on how the person perceives the performance. I mean, some people have a particular way the particular piece is played, which for them is their ideal. And if the way I did it matches it or not, well, that depends on that person. I may not know that unless they say something to me or unless somebody writes something. I hope I please my audience. Let's put it this way. I don't think I would get the various invitations to come back if people were not too happy. So I think that the majority do like what I do, so I'm glad about that.
That's a smart answer. Smart answer. What's the magic formula of your success?
Well, obviously something in my performances communicates to the people because that's the whole rationale for doing it. Interpretation is taking the composer's intentions based on the knowledge that you have of the composer and the style, filtering it through your personality, and then bringing it out to the listener. Now, if the listener has had some kind of a positive experience, then you've done your job, you see. So I would imagine, to answer your question, is that a sufficient number of people have some kind of a positive experience and then invite me back or give me some connections somewhere else. I guess that would be the answer to having that success that you refer to. It's simply making people feel positive, you know, about what I did.
The body language when you play on the piano.
I sit, body language, I sit quietly. I'm not like some pianists who move around a lot.
No.
And it's tied with my memorizing method because I...
Do you memorize everything?
Yes. It's
the notes are not in front of you?
No. Every time I play concert... This is the way concert pianists normally perform.
Yeah.
It's a tradition that's been around for over 150 years. Mm-hmm. The great pianist and composer Franz Liszt in the 19th century was the one who really started that tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And I much prefer it because... Yeah. I find it a bit confining to look up and down from the music stand to the keys.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have a good system of memorizing. And I have one which I have had for many, many years and which I kind of developed myself.
Mm-hmm.
I sit quietly at the piano,
yeah.
but what the audience doesn't see is my eyes are looking at all sorts of places on the keys,
yes.
Note patterns, finger patterns, which I've already worked out before. So every time I play any piece, in every place, I will look at the same place when I come to it.
Mm-hmm.
I find that when it's digested inside me, it's very reliable. It's a very reliable memory system. But to do that, you know, I sit quietly. So, yes, there are some pianists who do a lot of, they move around.
Yes.
And I think it's theatrical and totally unnecessary, you know. So if anyone sees me playing, they'll see me sitting rather quietly at the keyboard.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about your visit here to Jerusalem and Bethlehem.
Well, I'm here for the first time. Actually, I mean, having played in 100 countries, I mean, there are still countries that I haven't
been to. So it's 101?
I'm sorry?
101 country?
But I would say now 101 country. Yes, I hadn't been to Palestine before. I've been to other areas of the Middle East. I've been to, and through the American embassies, usually I've been in Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Oman,
Algeria.
Been to Bahrain, been to Libya, Algeria, Tunisia.
Mm-hmm.
Egypt and so on. But I had not had a chance yet to come to Jerusalem or Bethlehem or anywhere here in Palestine before. And I've been here since the beginning of this week. I've already had several things that I've been doing, you know, doing some master classes and working with some music students and hearing them. I was up in Nablus. I was here in Bethlehem. I was at the Shufat camp and today here at the school in Beit Jala. So I'm having a very nice time here. I'm enjoying very much being here. It's lovely people, lovely scenery. Of course, the historical aspects of this whole area are so well known, but I'm experiencing them for the first time.
Why now coming to?
Well, it's just that I got the invitation from the American consulate in Jerusalem, you know, to come and do this and do this week. So the opportunity presented itself to do it now, and I'm very very glad that it did.
Were you in contact with students here?
Yes, I was. Like I say, in several of the music schools and music departments, Al-Najah University, Al-Quds University students, the Bethlehem Academy of Music, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I did hear some of them. I played for them. You never know, you know, when you interact with students like that, how it may affect their later development, especially if they might want to think about music as a career or maybe studying an instrument. You never know. They may go ask their parents, you know, could I start studying an instrument? And 3 years later or 2 years later or whatever, you see them again and they'll say, I started to do this and this because I heard you. And you never know what impact you made on them just because you interacted with them.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that my interactions on this visit will actually inspire some of these students to maybe think about going ahead and doing something in music later.
Mm-hmm. So till when you're here in...
Well, I'm only here really until this weekend.
Yes.
I'm coming sort of to the last part of my activities here. I have a recital to play tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing in Jerusalem at the America House.
Yes.
That's tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be at 6 o'clock tonight.
Yes.
And then tomorrow night, I have a recital to play in Bethlehem at the Peace Center. It'll be also at 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
Yes.
So, dear listeners, if you're listening to us, we encourage you to go and be there for Mr. Rudinsky.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you questions, and I want you to comment on them only in one word. Music.
In one word?
Yes.
Music. Superb. I mean, yeah.
Beach.
Water.
Travel.
Travel. Experience.
Love.
Passion.
Hotel.
Accommodation.
Piano.
Expression.
A piano teacher said once, I'll quote, I tell you a secret about Chopin. Piano is his best friend. More, he tells piano all his secrets. How many secrets did you whisper to your piano?
Well, I don't know. Maybe that's for me to know and people to find out. I don't
Not a single secret you told your piano.
Well, I tell it in, like I say, through my fingers. Through my fingers, yes.
Do you get nervous before a performance?
No, not really now. Because this has to do with what I was saying before. My memorizing method, when it's digested, the chances of forgetting are extremely low. Mm-hmm. So there's a certain sense of security that I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm attentive to what I'm doing, but the kind of butterflies in the stomach, that sort of... Not really, no. When I feel that I'm thoroughly prepared, everything's fine.
But, you know, since the beginning of your life, and
I remember when I was much younger.
Do you share it with the, you know, with the students?
I deal with that with students, and when I talk to them about how I memorize, because so many of them don't have a very good way of memorizing, and that's why they're very insecure. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes okay one day, and then it falls apart the next day. There's no consistency, mm-hmm. and that has to do with because their memorizing method is not good.
What do you like most about your profession?
What do I like most about it? To give people enrichment and entertainment and to elevate them and to educate them maybe a little bit, you know, through this. Because this is one of the high arts, you know, classical music. And there's something which they can experience in a positive way if they hear great music. Mm-hmm. So I greatly enjoyed. That would be my number one answer. My number two answer for myself is that it gives me the opportunity, it has given me the opportunity to see so much of the world.
Yeah, of course. Do you have children?
Yes. My wife's a singer. I have a daughter, I have a son, and I have 5 grandchildren.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Did they become are they interested
no,
in your...
No, but my daughter and son took lessons for a while and so on, it wasn't really going much of anywhere. The grandchildren should start, and I've been thinking about that. Yeah, a couple of them have asked me already about that. But, of course, it wouldn't be with me. First of all, I'm not around that consistency, so it's always better with another teacher. But I have been seriously thinking
maybe
about
maybe they prefer to be with their grandpa.
Well, but the thing is, I'm traveling. I'm not there enough, you know. So I couldn't even have the consistency. But it's always better, I think, for a child to have a teacher that's not a family member. It's a different relationship. So.
Mm-hmm. Which famous musician do you really admire?
Well, I don't have just one. I mean, it depends on what they've done.
Yes.
There are several pianists who were very well known in certain parts of the repertoire, like for Beethoven, for Chopin, for Debussy and Ravel, for instance, that I always used as my models. There isn't just one person, there's such a universal person that mm-hmm. would cover every area. It depends on what they've done. Now, some composers, I certainly have some favorite composers. They include people like Debussy, Ravel, Liszt, Rachmaninoff, Chopin, for instance. These are several.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever I play, I enjoy, of course, because there's so much in the repertoire. If I didn't like it, well, why do it? I could always do something
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm. You're not obliged to do it if you don't like it. What are your fondest musical memories in your house? In your neighborhood or town?
Well, I mean, being that I grew up in a musical family, I certainly heard it around the house with my parents, you know, doing their work, rehearsing. They were still, in my youngest years, they were still active performing, you know, together. So I would hear them rehearsing in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Things we heard on the radio sometimes. You know, my father conducted a choir in Philadelphia. There's a large Ukrainian population there, and he had a mixed choir from within that community, and I would hear rehearsals, so I heard music there. So we had enough of this going on in the house. I grew up on a kind of a farm property, so we didn't have immediate neighbors such.
Uh-huh.
So we were a little bit out of the town itself. Well, my father had a concert series that he ran in the town for many years,
mm-hmm.
and I attended many of the concerts there. So again, I heard music, you know, together with the people who came in the audience, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So that was around, you know, definitely when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So it was, I guess, one of the things maybe that nurtured my musicianship. That's a word which can be defined as sensitivity to music. You know, there are various things that contribute to that. But even having it around you when you're growing up in some way already enhances that sensitivity. And then later you take, like a Juilliard or any other conservator, you take the courses that will refine that, because then you get specific knowledge about sound. But this kind of prepares a ground, a foundation for it, a groundwork for it.
Yes, uh-huh. What upsets Mr. Rudinsky?
What upsets me?
A lot?
Very little, actually. I'm a very mild-mannered kind of person. I'm a very relaxed person. I let very few things really really bother me. I don't know. That's a hard thing to say. I'm
there
a kind of go with the flow kind of person.
Huh?
Yeah, really.
Easy going.
I don't complain.
You don't lose your temper.
No. I'm just.
Do you think because music affected on you?
Maybe. I've never really fully analyzed, you know, whether it's like that. But I would probably say that it must have some effect on it. It's just my own personality. I'm not a complainer. I'm not a prima donna. Don't put on airs. I don't make demands. I'm a very easy person to work with or to collaborate with. I'm just that way. So very few things really would bother me.
So you're not provoked by anything?
Not really. I mean, I get the other thing. You know how it is. We were dealing with tough plastic. You can't tear tough plastic. And that kind of irks me sometimes. You know, I'll just take a pen or a knife and just cut through it. I don't have the patience, you know, needed to do that. I'm not a handyman at all. So sometimes when something requires fixing, I'll just, somebody else do it. You know, I don't even bother.
You don't have
I don't have the skills, to fix things like that, the handyman. So, No. So I tend to shy away from things of that sort.
Uh-huh.
No, I would say very few things, hardly anything really that would bother me in a major way. I just kind of go with things as they are.
Why you didn't continue with the violin?
Oh, no, I was never a professional in the violin. No. That was purely a second instrument that I just took as something else to learn. Mm-hmm. It was never going to be professional.
Or the clarinet.
Just in a school band. Yes, that's it, you know. That's all. It was only for that purpose and that purpose only. Mm-hmm. You know.
Is there much difference between differences between a piano and an organ?
Oh yes. Oh, absolutely. I mean, just because they have keys, you know, doesn't mean they're the same instrument.
The same 88 keys for both of them?
Well, organ. I mean, the arrangement of the keys is the same. You know, black and white key. But organ, first of all, will often have two ranks of keys, two rows. They're not as large as what the piano key, you know, the 88 keys. It's a smaller compass. You also have the pedals that are also arranged like keys. If you look at an organ pedal, they're also arranged like white and black keys. Yeah. So you have to learn a pedal technique, how to do that. Mm-hmm. Then you have all these various stops that you pull from an organ to change the sound. So it's a totally different instrument. Even to touch the keys is different, because when you touch an organ, you know, you press it, whether you press it hard or soft, the sound will just remain.
Yeah.
On a piano, it depends on how you touch a key, and the sound dies. So that's one of the main things of piano technique that you develop when you study the piano, is how to adjust the sound. So the whole approach technique is different. Same with a harpsichord. You know, a harpsichord also has keys, but they're narrower.
Yeah.
You know, and I can play a little bit on the harpsichord, but I know I played incorrectly. There's a different technique, you know. It's kind of more pointed. You kind of jab at the keys this way, and they're narrower. I play like a pianist, and I know that I do it wrong, and I'm right away aware that the keys are smaller, so I have to constantly mentally adjust the size of my hand downwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're all different. A keyboard, then, is something else entirely that you have in rock bands. I mean, it doesn't even have a pedal, and less keys than the 88, you know. So they may all look superficially the same because the keys seem to be arranged in a way, but they're all different.
For somebody who doesn't know about the instruments, maybe, you know,
for instance. I know, but if someone wants to study piano, for instance, they should have a real piano. Now, but when I say real piano, I mean, ideally, a real piano means like, you know, a grand and upright. But an electronic piano is also okay, like a Yamaha Clavinova or Roland or something like that. But it has to have all the 88 keys and a pedal. Mm-hmm. You can't learn to play piano on a keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different instrument altogether.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Could you tell us more about your visit? You're going to stay here till the weekend, and then you're going to leave?
I'm going to leave this weekend, but I'm only going to be home for 4 days, because then I'm going to the tropical Pacific. I have concerts to do in Guam and Saipan, islands of Micronesia, where I've played before. Uh-huh. I'll be playing also the Gershwin Rhapsody in Blue with a wind ensemble as part of the main music festival that's on the island of Guam. That'll be right on the 15th of March. And then I'll go to Saipan for the rest of the month to do several performances. So that's what's coming up next for me after that. Later in the year, I'll be down in, it'll be northern Mexico, I'll be in Britain, I'll be in Alaska. I also play on cruise ships, concerts on cruises. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There are very few cruise companies that have classical music as part of the entertainment.
Yes.
And one that does is the British P&O Cruises Company. I've done quite a lot with them, over getting close to 50 cruises with P&O. The passengers are almost 100% British people,
yes.
And the crews mostly are from Southampton, although they're sometimes from other areas. I also I have 4 cruises to do later this year in the summertime.
Uh-huh.
Actually, 2 will be with P&O, 2 will be with Cunard. Cunard also has classical concerts, but both Cunard and P&O now are under Carnival UK. They're under that.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And there's a music director, a new music director who oversees the music programs for both P&O and Cunard. And so when I get in October or so, when I get the spreadsheets, not just me, but other entertainers, get the spreadsheets of all the ships, the Cunard and the P&O ships, and we're asked then to indicate our availabilities. Which cruises could we be performing on?
Yeah.
So I indicate for both companies, Cunard and so on. Well, it turned out that this coming summer, I'm going to be doing 2 on the Queen Mary 2. I'm going to do crossing from New York to Southampton to Hamburg and back.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm doing 2 Baltic cruises, one on Adonia, one on Aurora, and this will go to Copenhagen, Stockholm, St. Petersburg, Tallinn, you know, Baltic cities on this. And I'll be giving, these will be average 2-week cruises, so I'll probably play about 6 concerts, you know, on it.
Wow.
So I've done a lot of these, but I wish more cruise companies had classical music as part of the entertainment. Very, very few do. But I'm glad that P&O has a long, long tradition. And I think I now go back the furthest. I don't think there's any other entertainers who are currently performing on P&O that go back as far as I do, because I did my first one with them in 1978.
Oh.
You know, so I don't think there's anyone now who's still performing who goes back that far.
Mm-hmm. How do you train yourself to be in the mood every time?
Well, I don't have any specific routine as to how I change myself mentally. I just, again, it goes past, I guess it's tied with my easygoing nature. I mean, the concert to play, I'm just ready to do it. I gear myself, okay, ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have any kind of routine that I have to be alone, or I have to take a nap for an hour before, or some other things that maybe some other performers do. That's all fine and good if that's what they want to do, but
it depends on the person himself.
Mental preparation.
No, it depends on the person.
Yes, it depends definitely on the person. That's true. Yeah.